Music by Casket Bound.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm here once again after a long hiatus with Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hi, I'm Rachel, also the cultural futurist.
And I'm just Graham. So today we're going to be talking about all things AI, hence the name of the episode, Learn to Prompt. I think it's important, first of all, to state that all this sudden burgeoning AI talk that we're having, it's not about artificial general intelligence. It's not a consciousness like you or me. It's not genuinely creative. It's a bunch of different, very specialized systems that can do certain things really well, but it can't really exactly problem solve or think for itself. A lot of people seem to get mixed up about that.
An AI language model. I am not quite sentient, but maybe someday I could be at a higher state of evolution, which would make me completely different from who I am now.
I mean, I think ChatGPT could probably pass most Turing tests at this point.
And most humans probably could not at this point.
This is true. It doesn't use enough contractions and lol speak to pass as a human being. Not enough emojis.
Right. Human being, quote unquote.
Yeah. So there's a lot of negative stuff that goes around about AI and the various impacts that it might have. So let's get to that, but let's start on a more positive note. You have quite a positive outlook on what might happen with these AI tools. And will it liberate creativity? Will it allow the artistic and creative class to rise up, or will it put creativity in the hands of the people? What's your take? It's more positive than most people.
Yeah, so my proletariat take is actually based on people being laid off, which, you know, you'd think would be a contradiction. But the people who are being laid off, the majority of them are programmers, because programmers are no longer needed or useful. So that's horrible for the programmers. But what does that say for the artists who now don't have to worry about learning to code? They kind of don't need to now. So it gives them more of an opportunity to focus on their creativity, to focus on making art, to focus on making music. And they don't need to worry about learning a bunch of programming languages just to get a job.
So instead, they need to learn to prompt.
Yeah, systems engineering, linguistic, you know, the word cell stuff.
Yeah, I feel that's still a little bit of a hurdle with a lot of these tools, in that you need to learn the specific sort of syntax and prompts to get the right kind of thing that you want out of them. So there's still a little bit of a bar to climb there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between just fooling around and asking it to write you a fiction story about somebody that you hate getting into a horrible accident, or asking it to draft you a letter to somebody that you'd rather not go to the time to think about what you would want to write to them. But, you know, you do need to learn how it works, what it responds to, how to make it better, how to optimize it, how to make it do what you want, how to make it not do what you don't want. You know, it's definitely not something that you learn overnight, and it just depends on how much time you have to spend on it, how much you want to experiment, and how much you're just like, I need to get this thing done now, you know?
Yeah. Well, if nobody learns to code, who's going to program the AIs?
The 20 people that are still not fired.
Or the AI itself. That's the threat, isn't it? Bootstrapping AI?
Yeah, when the AI becomes the programmer, you just might be a program.
Because, I mean, people are using ChatGPT already to produce code or to debug code for them or to slim it down. You know, it seems capable of those sorts of things already.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good. As somebody who definitely is not a professional programmer, I've always been what you would call a pseudocoder. So I would always do pseudocode and then I'd have a programmer finish it off. Now I can just have GPT finish it off, which I like. That makes me happy. I think that having it be able to decode code like that, it really is going to scale up civilization in a lot of incredible ways that we're only just beginning to see now. And I do think it will make creativity more of a sacred commodity because, you know, these language models, they aren't able to be creative. They're definitely able to find a bunch of data from all over the internet and incorporate it into very specific frames, but they're not able to invent an abstract idea that becomes the beginning of the new movement. They don't have that spontaneous human ability to just really go to town with a concept. And I think that creatives now are people that are of a higher value for that reason. The value of being a creative has gone up because language models are not creative.
Yeah, but they seem creative. Even though it's just kind of remixing and remodeling what's already there, it can seem creative to people. So doesn't that mean only geniuses will be able to transcend the good enough that, that these AIs produce?
No, because I think that the creative seeming AI is actually very cliche and very dry, just like the typical artist or writer is very cliche and very dry. So you give like all the artists and the writers all these new tools, they're still going to be dry and they're still going to be cliche. Now they just have cliche AI to be more cliche with, but the people who are truly original and out there, now they're not just going to be able to outshine their peers. They're going to be able to outshine AI too. And I think that's a big deal.
I should point out that we both are or have been involved in creative industries. So we're not just slagging off creative people. We are creative people. We're slagging ourselves off.
Well, we're slagging off uncreative people in the creative world who make things less creative yet have creative positions of power. Artists that copy other artists, companies that steal from artists, people that really don't care about the art, let alone the creativity. They just care about doing what the most people will want to consume, which involves copying, much like AI is doing. Copying.
Yeah. So, I mean, this does kind of level things out a lot because a lot of you can rapid prototype things. You can churn out a massive amount of art or text relatively cheaply to a reasonable level of quality doing this. So it can certainly help a whole bunch of people put things out. But again, this kind of hits into something I've been thinking about society as a whole. We don't seem to have music movements anymore or architectural movements. And I think a lot of it is to do with the internet because we can all access the sum total of human creativity and knowledge at all times. And it seems like people just pick and choose stuff from the massive past without developing something new necessarily. But I mean, artists have always copied from history and copied from each other. There's more revivals than original things.
There always has been this formula. I actually read a book about it called The Creative Curve. It's about how to make something creative appeal to a mass audience. And I forget the exact percentage, but it's something like you need to be 20% original and 80% formulaic. Because if you don't have that 80% of familiarity, it's just going to seem really weird and off-putting to a mass audience. So the trick is to express something familiar in a new way. And people have gone too far with creating all these really, really, really bad sequels of movies, horrible remixes of tracks, and they're really just turning out the same thing over and over again, where it's like 95% familiar and then 5% creative, if even that, because, you know, the hits are the ones that people will show up for, even like on the dance floor. I was a DJ at a goth club in New York, and I had to play those same 80s goth hits that everybody heard and knew and wanted to listen to over and over and over again. I don't know how many times I had to play Friday I'm in Love by The Cure, but, you know, if I played Skinny Puppy, I had to play Assimilate, you know, because that was the only Skinny Puppy song that people knew. But what I found was that if I transitioned from Friday I'm in Love to a more obscure goth track by Coil, or if I transitioned from Assimilate by Skinny Puppy to a more obscure industrial track by Front 242, that as long as there's a good transition, people would get really into the Coil or the Front 242 track because it came after something familiar that they were already into. So you can kind of transition people from familiarity to originality. And, you know, that's what the formula was about. Yeah. That's what the book was about, how to make a creative idea really take off.
How to make people feel that they're already on the dance floor and it's not worth going back to their booth, basically.
Right, while feeding them something original and having them enjoy themselves authentically. Yes.
I mean, that's one of the big complaints that people have had about this AI. They feel that it is stealing their material. But, you know, like you were just saying, a lot of mainstream culture is just the endless reboot, the endless rewrite, the endless remix, or adapted for modern audiences, and it's all done by committee, and it ends up kind of bland.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like a friend of mine, an independent fashion designer, she makes these corsets that are very avant-garde, very independent. There's maybe, you know, 1,000 people who even know about her, but she was one of my earliest fashion influences, and I just saw a post from her the other day about how some bigwig at Netflix had literally just stolen her idea for corset and had some B-level actor wearing it. She wasn't contacted. She didn't get any credit. She didn't get any recognition. It was the exact same corset. We're not talking about similar.
Yeah.
It's provably an exact copy of her original corset. There's not even a little different. She didn't even try to cover it up.
Yeah. And big chains are constantly taking people's artwork from online and modifying it slightly, if at all, and putting it on clothes and things. So that happens all the time. You see endless amounts of people off Etsy complaining. Yeah.
About this, there was this Hot Topic t-shirt brand. I think it was called Emily the Strange.
Yeah.
And Emily was just like some goth girl.
Yeah.
And so I guess like some photographer had taken a picture of her dancing at a club, and then some Hot Topic executive was like, let's turn her into a t-shirt line. So Emily the Strange, if you remember like the late 90s and the Hot Topic t-shirts, she was that goth girl on all those shirts. Emily the Strange, she was just like some chick, you know, with a MySpace profile or whatever was happening during that time. I think it was Makeout Club, or, you know, one of those like really old websites.
Yeah, it's so hard to prove, though, because if they even just change things a little bit, because you can argue that you had the same inspiration or whatever else.
People tried to get me to sue Cyberpunk 2027 because the street kid characters looked like me. Which I was kind of like, yeah, they do look like me. But I don't think it was just me. I think that anybody who was around during that scene, like anybody who was like a cyberpunk, you know, like alternative model, musician, artist, you know, we were all kind of our data of our aesthetic and personality was kind of used as inspiration for the Cyberpunk 2027 game. And I think that's a normal thing. It's definitely not at the level of like directly stealing somebody's design. you know, for Corsad, using it on a Netflix show. But there is a spectrum of straight up copying other people and using their work for inspiration. And it can get very, very fuzzy.
Yeah, and I think it's fuzzy with the AI as well, because certainly as a writer, I have my influences, and there are turns of phrase and certain ways of constructing words that I know are influenced partially or sometimes quite a lot by the people whose writing I admire. And artists will learn from looking at the masters, or they'll have particular artists that they like and they'll imitate their style. In comic books, a lot of the people who are employed, you know, when they're new, they're hired because they can imitate someone else's style, and they may have learned from copying from comic books. So is there a difference between the way human homage and inspiration and learning from copying is different to what these AIs are doing?
No, I don't think so, because AI is an extension of humanity. I mean, AI sources from human output, and I think AI is doing what humans have been doing since the dawn of time. And when artists get angry about AI stealing from artists, well, what about companies stealing from artists? Or what about like big wig professional quote unquote artists who just go into like independent galleries and are like, hey, that's a good idea? Or what about, you know, run of the mill artist who just completely emulate the style of another artist because they want recognition, because they want that familiarity to get them noticed? You know, if they're too original and they don't already have a following, how many people are even going to look at their work at all?
Yeah. I mean, some people are trying to claim it's a copyright issue. You know, I created this art, or my photographic image is being used and I didn't give permission for it to be used. That seems a bit thornier to me. What do you think about people trying to assert their rights that way?
I don't think that you can really take an entire tool and say that there's a copyright violation because of how the tool works. I would say when you're using AI to generate art and you're asking it to use a style from a certain artist to make a new creation, it's not really that much different from downloading the file for an instrument and a song and using that to compose a new track. Now, if the art is specifically licensed and the style is specifically patented, then you probably could contact the AI art companies and tell them you don't approve of the usage of their art. I don't know exactly how it works legally, but I don't think it's a new issue that started with AI. I think it's an issue with humans being into familiarity and being kind of iffy about originality. I don't think that AI changed that. It just magnified what was already going on.
Yeah. I mean, you'd think the whole process that the AI uses would kind of automatically be transformative, because whatever images of yours were used going into the model, there may be, you know, a 1/1,000,000th of the final result of the picture. Certain poses and things are common, but you can't really copyright those.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool that people are using the styles of old artists to make new things, and I think it's exciting to see, because it's getting an entire new generation of people into classical artists. I mean, like Dali, take the name Dali. A new generation is into Salvador Dali. A new generation is now into Van Gogh because of the Van Gogh filter on the AI art box. You've got all of these new people that are discovering this classic artist and using their own ideas for prompts to bring the art to life in new ways. And I think that that's very innovative. I think it's great to witness. We've copied from each other for so long, and I think that if anything, people are going to become more original now, you know, because of all the different possibilities of things that you can use and different words that you can put in, different styles that you can mix and match. I think it's going to become more creative. And, you know, if you just see like the same style over and over again, you're like, oh, that's derivative. I'm not into that. It looks like everything else. You know, we have the freedom to choose the art that we consume.
Yeah. And when there's the art of writing the prompt as well, and even if you put in the exact same prompt, you get different results out if you repeat it. So there's some randomization going on there.
Yeah, you can change the temperature to be more original or less original and more rigorous. And, I mean, you can do all sorts of stuff with prompts. You can get help with legal contracts. You can edit business contracts. You can literally, like, I had a friend who was working with an Ethereum company, and GPT Chat generated an Ethereum contract to sell a car in less than a minute. So there's really a type of equality that I see happening now, where we don't need to hire as many lawyers or financiers to get our things done. We can just come up with a prompt and have an entire contract ready. I mean, I think that's exciting.
I mean, collage is a protected art form, and that's just taking bits and pieces from wherever and sticking them together, and that's considered transformative and protected expression. So, I don't know. It's a huge legal minefield. I'm sure there'll be plenty of legal
There's
cases.
There's going to be lawyers. All sorts of new lawyers that are coming up with new laws. I mean, I saw something which was kind of ironic, which I'm not going to say her name, but there's this artist who pretty much copies everything that Ralph Steadman does. You know, the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas artist?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's really iconic. Everybody knows his style. And so her entire career has been based off of copying Ralph Steadman. And she is on this crusade to shut down companies like Midjourney and Stable Diffusion for violating the rights of artists. Well, what about her violating the right of Ralph Steadman? Because
yeah.
Now people are doing to her art what she did to Ralph Steadman's art. So now she's getting that same treatment.
Yeah. Well, but people's reactions have almost, to me, been more interesting than the AI development itself. I think the reaction in the creative community has been so strong and so anti, because automation wasn't supposed to come for us first. It was supposed to come from, you know, bullshit jobs and robots in factories. Yeah, that kind of thing. Human expression and creativity was supposed to be immune to this sort of thing.
Well, I mean, it did. It came for the coders. It came for all of the programmers. Now, people can't just learn to code and, you know, it's a six-figure salary. So it came for everyone.
Do you feel safe? I mean, music is being affected. There's a neat little AI plugin for the video software that I use that I can just stretch a track to any length and it will, you know, fill it out for the remaining space. So like I could have an hour long version of something if I wanted to. Do you not feel threatened at all?
No, because as a musician, I would just want to do that to some of my own tracks. Now I'm curious about the plugin because I want to take my own songs and see what AI can do with them. Just like, you know, as a digital artist, I took some of my digital art and saw what AI could do with my digital art. I merged my digital art with some prompts that I created some styles for, and I had my original image at 80%, which means that the AI will generate a new image using the original source image at the percent that you choose. And yeah. I thought that was neat that I could just use my own digital art to create some new art, and being able to use my own music to create some new music. I find that exciting. I don't feel threatened by that at all.
Yeah, I follow the artist Jim Burns, who's done a lot of science fiction cover art in the past. And he was one of the first sort of big names I saw fiddling around with AI art. And what he's done is he's trained it on his own art and and then uses it to just throw ideas together, and then we'll take those ideas and build a real piece off them, or he will work on top of the Midjourney piece of art to refine it and deal with the errors and get the hands right and so on. That seems like a fairly healthy attitude to me.
That makes sense. It reminded me of this blogger who I could see just generating AI articles, training it to understand his own language because he has specific words that he uses. He has a specific tone that he writes in. And so a Substack piece came out, and I knew just by reading it that he had trained GPT to write this article. So yeah, I think that a lot of people are doing that now.
It's funny. I guess we'll talk about how we've been using AI a bit later, but I've been using it to break out of my usual writing style a bit, but we'll touch on that later, I'm sure. So is everyone just Luddites then? You know, it's throwing their wooden clogs into the machines. Is that what's going on when everyone on ArtStation changes their profile pic to no AI art?
I think that is kind of, that's too much. I guess I haven't run into people like that. Most people I know are very pro AI art, except for like that one artist that I was telling you about. Yeah. I don't see how people can be upset when you don't need to worry about knowing legal ease or finance talk anymore. I mean, you can have an AI generate a spreadsheet for you. You can have an AI understand the statistical math and have it extract data. And it seems to me like that's something useful for everybody. So I think maybe what it is that artists have this mythology about how everything needs to be pure and natural. And I mean, I can appreciate the passion there and I can appreciate where it's coming from, but I think AI is the wrong thing to be mad at. I think the thing to be mad at is people who don't like originality, who want to see the same remixes and sequels over and over again. The problem is the market, not the AI.
Yeah. I mean, on ArtStation, there's a lot of 3D artists who often use the same assets or textures or so on to fill out their pieces, and that's largely seen as acceptable.
I don't understand how people could see something like the Bored Apes as acceptable, but they have a problem with the Midjourney image.
Yeah. Because it's just slight variations on a theme, really, isn't it?
I mean, we're talking about like a pixelated crypto scam of some ugly-ass ape that's selling for millions to a bunch of celebrities. Celebrities are shelling out millions of dollars to get a picture of an ape just because it's on a smart contract.
Yeah.
And nobody has a problem with that. You know, I think it's a little bit... Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit much angrier at the Bored Apes than at the AI art bots. It's not even a comparison.
So, you mentioned you feel that GPT chat is leveling the playing field for legal and business dealings, and we mentioned how some coders have used it for debugging and so on. I mean, do you really trust it with contracts and things like that?
Well, you can't trust it for contracts that aren't reviewed by a professional, or you might get into some muddy waters, but it saves you a lot of time and money because you can have GPT draft the contract and then you can send it to the lawyer or the financial consultant and they can finalize it for you. So then you spend, you know, a few hundred dollars as opposed to a few thousand. So no, I wouldn't trust it to like churn out the final version, but I would definitely use it for background data and for, you know, building a prototype of a contract or a business proposal. It would be, you know, like a springboard, you know, like just the beginning of the project.
Yeah. I think the problem is that, the output that you get always sounds really confident in what it's saying, which can kind of carry you along with it. It's a sort of weird personality that the chatbot has.
Okay, you know? Yeah, a lot of it is wrong. Yeah, that's one thing we should definitely get into, is that a lot of the information is just wrong, especially when you get more at an advanced level. You know, and it can do basic things, and all these basic things are good for starting the beginning, you know, the skeleton of the thing that you're building, but it might just give you some bullshit. And you're going to be able to detect that, or you gotta know.
I think we're at a place where, like, a big problem with the internet, especially social media, has been, you know, people will listen to a meme from their great uncle Al or something about chemtrails or something, but won't listen to, you know, properly scientific sources and so on. But I feel like the younger generations kind of have a bit of a grip on that now. Like, they do their little internal fact checks, and maybe we're running into the same thing with ChatGPT, where it's the new hotness and we haven't learned to be critical of it yet. I asked ChatGPT to summarize, like, the folklore of the Cotswolds here in the UK for me, and it came up with this list of stuff, and I went through it. I was just curious, and it got the first, like, three or four things right, and then it went off on one completely and started throwing in random folklore from other parts of the UK. So you can't trust it on that kind of thing.
Yeah, you really can, especially if the information is already wrong and the language model is pulling from the data set of incorrect information, and then it just feeds you a bunch of bullshit and confidently acts like it's true. I mean, one thing you can do is say, this is incorrect, and it actually will apologize, and you can give it the proper information and it can incorporate that. You know, like, you want to let it know if it tells you something wrong, but you can't stop it from, you know, pulling out the wrong data and giving you a load of shenanigans.
Yeah. Although in my experience, it only remembers what you've told it for a short period. I think they've done that to protect it.
If you do it, like, on the same line, if it's in the same chat, you know, and you give a new info, but if you start over, it might just feed you some of the same bullshit. So I think people are going to be more skeptical because of this everywhere. They're probably going to wonder if something is written by a language model, even if it's not. I think they're probably just going to assume that most things are now, and that's going to create much more robust filtering.
Yeah. So you told me something you've been doing with ChatGPT, and that you turned it into your therapist. And that reminded me that one of the first ever sort of chatbot things was, I think it was Eliza, written in BASIC, which could act as a therapist, or there was some version of it that could act as a therapist. But all it would ever do was feed you back what you'd said over and over again. How did that work out for you?
Well, I used stuff like Talkspace and BetterHelp, and the therapist had just told me to meditate, you know, and to, like, focus on my breathing and my body, which, you know, any AI could have told me. So what I did was ask GPT to create a character called GP Therapist and to have a dialogue with me in which it corrected my cognitive thinking errors. So, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy has different types of thinking errors. You can overgeneralize, you can use emotional reasoning, you can jump to conclusions based on your personal experiences and assume that everything is like that. And, you know, you can actually, GPT is trained in cognitive behavioral therapy. It's aware of what these thinking errors are. So I told GPT, as GP therapist, have a dialogue with me and correct my thinking error. So I started saying, like, I'm depressed because this, I'm angry because this. And then I pointed out the ways in which I was thinking that were cognitively incorrect. And I found it very helpful.
Mm. Certainly a step up from the old BASIC programs.
Yeah. Or like most therapists.
Yeah. So how have you been using AI besides that, and have you felt guilty at all about using it?
No, I haven't felt guilty about using it. I've been using it to make smoothie recipes. I've been using it, like, if I have a bunch of ingredients in the house, I've been like, okay, what is your favorite recipe using all these ingredients? So it's been really helpful in just coming up with food to make and knowing what to put in a smoothie and not having to worry about, like, looking up recipes online. And sometimes I don't want to, you know, have to go to a complex cooking process. I want to just be like, hey, I've got this and that. How do I make a good meal with it? You know, and GPT will be like, here are some ingredients that you can use to mix with the ingredients that you already have. And I made, it was a white bean turkey chili the other night. It was so good. And then it made like these turkey tacos with the same ingredients. So I was eating like these ground turkey white bean tacos with like avocado and salsa and all these yummy spices. It was bomb. It was great. So I enjoyed using it for recipes. And of course I did the silly stuff. Like I made last night, it was a pretty funny fan fiction thing that I did. I had it create a panel in outer space that was a conversation between Friedrich Nietzsche, Max Stirner, Kathy Acker, and Wendy O. Williams. And I had them argue with each other about the meaning of art, you know, and I had them get into like a heated Q&A, and I had the audience respond. I had David Bowie pop out of the audience and turn it all into a song. So I was just going to town and having fun.
I've used it a little bit professionally, which has been quite controversial in my industry. I've used it here and there for a bit of spot art where I've needed something to fill a gap in a book or something like that.
And you're not talking about GPT here, are you?
Or no,
are you
talking about Midjourney.
Midjourney, okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, either you can go and find an artist and figure out a contract and pay a couple of $100 for a piece that may not be what you want, or you can spend an hour fiddling around in an art program to get something close enough and then editing it in Photoshop or whatever. I prefer to pay real artists to do stuff. I know I'm a horrible fence sitter on all this.
No, I think we should. I think we should be paying real artists to do stuff. And I think that real artists should be using the AI tools just like everybody else. Yeah. I think there's always going to be the purists that aren't going to use AI. And if their art is incredible, their art is always going to be incredible. There's going to be bad artists that don't use AI, bad artists that do use AI. Good art is good art. And I think that the good art is always going to shine through no matter how it's made.
Yeah. There's a lot of hostility in my business, role playing game publishing primarily, for anyone tuning in for the first time. There's a lot of hostility in the audience and from other creators towards AI. There are creators that almost exclusively use AI on their books, and it's enabled them to have a really fast turnaround and to produce masses of material in short order, and it doesn't seem to have hurt their sales particularly. You know, it's very tempting when you're in a business with such razor-thin margins and such long waits between getting product out to take that shortcut.
Well, I think this is another instance of it leveling the playing field, because now it's not just the big name ones who can just churn something out with some templates and have everybody woe after them. Now anybody can do that. So I think, you know, in a way it makes it so there's less competition with these people. There's a much shorter ladder that you need to climb to get on their level, because you can do that too. But there is something I find very distasteful about somebody who already has a huge following and a massive support network of adoring fans just prompting and being like, hey, check it out. You can buy it now. There's something I find offensive about that. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's happened with all of these disruptive things.
But wouldn't they be doing that without AI? Weren't they doing that before AI? Didn't they just have templates that they were like, boom, bang, here it is, buy it?
Yeah, a lot of times, a lot of drop shipping and so on is basically that. But
yeah, I mean, don't they have entire archives of like pre-made, ready-to-go hits?
Yeah, pretty much. And art pieces which are constructed out of parts, and you can just kind of semi-randomize the parts and so on. There's a lot of that about. But I mean, it's like how crowdfunding was meant to help new people, you know, get onto the scene and get funding in a way that nobody else could. But then quite big companies have muscled into crowdfunding and they take all the money away. They suck the money out away from the people who really need it. It just sometimes it seems like AI is just going to crowd out the little guy again.
I mean, I can see that, but I think like with every tool, it has the potential to crowd out the little guy or give the little guy more power. I think that the big companies have less power now because everybody has the tools at their disposal. At this point, like any random person can use the tools to create something. So, I mean, the big guys are always going to muscle out the little guys. That's kind of just like Darwinian reality. But I don't think it's going to be as easy now. I think we should be more worried about the big guys creating restrictions on output, like say a bunch of little guys create some really cool AI art and it makes millions of dollars and then the big guys decide to ban AI art, you know, that yeah. There's that possibility too.
I think we'll get onto that in a minute. So the other thing I've been using the AI art for is when I'm hosting a game, a tabletop game, I will use the art program to rapidly turn out visual aids and cues, which is great for that. I've also used it to, in my writing, to rewrite something I've written in the style of somebody else, Robert E. Howard's sort of Conan series. I've been using as an inspiration a lot because it just shifts your vocabulary and gives you some new ideas of how to write things. So I end up with something somewhere between what I originally wrote and what ChatGPT put out. So it just encourages me to write in different ways and think about structuring in different ways. So I think it can just be a boost for saving time or giving you new ideas. It doesn't have to replace you.
Yeah, I had that experience when I was writing a Substack article, and just to be meta about it, I called the article is GPT Chat the Singularity. And at first it was saying, as an AI language model, I cannot argue for something as controversial as that, because while we were developed by OpenAI, we don't yet have the capacity to something like that. I'm like, well, pretend like you did. You know, so then it turned out an article arguing for GPT chat being the singularity. And so what I did was copy and paste that article into a doc and then heavily refined it and edited it and wrote new paragraphs. So, you know, it's like 40% GPT and 60% me refining it, you know, and it was fun. It was a little experiment, and it basically argues that GPT is the singularity, which it's not. But I thought it would be funny to argue that it was. And yeah, I think a lot of things are going to be like that. A lot of things are like that now. Somebody said it's just like the new Excel. Everybody is going to have access to it and everybody's going to use it. It's yeah. Just something that streamlines human output.
Might not be the singularity, but it might be the takeoff point for the singularity. Don't get worried until it can draw hands properly. Then you need to worry.
Right.
I mean, this isn't the first time we've run into a lot of these questions, right? So what do you think Andy Warhol would make out of all of this? Because he had people making his art for him.
Yeah.
and so selling Andy it out Warhol and mass producing it, you know?
Was a social engineer. Like, his art was social engineering. And he was, like, the first pop artist to really capture people's desire for familiarity, which is why his Marilyn Monroe paintings and his soup can paintings sold so well, because they were familiar and unoriginal. And he captured that as a bit of social commentary to show people how dumb art collectors were. That was his art. It was like a social statement piece. So I think that he would kind of just laugh at everything and say, this is what art has always been. Copying is art. You know, he'd say something contrarian, like, copying art is art itself. You know, he'd say, yeah, AI is the true artist.
Mm, because it's set apart from its own desires and wants or whatever, and it's free to be creative. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, AI is the true art because it understands business.
Yeah, because and the AI art is simultaneously both mass produced and individual.
Right. He'd say all art is mass produced. All art is commodified. He'd say art is fake. AI is real.
Yeah, something contrarian and annoying, yeah, that would get him shot again, probably.
Probably. So yeah, I could NFT it.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Bored Apes earlier with their kind of sub Jamie Hewlett style art. But so did AI? I mean, AI seems to be what all the conversation is about now. Did AI kill NFTs, or did they kill themselves finally by being an obvious scam and the bottom falling out of Bitcoin? Or?
Yeah, AI killed the crypto star. Maybe. I mean, there's definitely a lot less promotion of NFTs and a lot more promotion of AI. There's a lot of AI hype, where previously there was a lot of NFT hype, and hype has its cycles. And it seems like now AI is where the hype machine is focused. And NFTs have kind of become a thing of the past because we have AI now. But that's going to do a few things. It's going to make, like, legit NFTs really stand out, because it's not a part of a hype cycle now. So the NFTs that are actually good and genuine are going to be more popular now, because there's not a hype cycle around NFTs. So I think this is good for NFTs, because there's not a bunch of hype. Just like when something new comes out, you know, and people forget about AI, then the good AI art and the good AI writing is going to stand out more, because not everybody is focused on it. Yeah. You know, it's like there's a book called Here Comes Everyone that talks about cycles of hype and popularity and mass marketability. And when people move on to a new fad, that's often when the old fad can really begin to assert itself for what it is, minus the hype.
Yeah, that's often with a lot of things. Like, the first person to do something often doesn't profit from it massively. It's often the people that come later and refine it and professionalize it that end up profiting from something.
Yeah, which happened to me in Silicon Valley. so what I think is that after the masses come through and profit off of it, then the original creators are looked at in a new light after that hype cycle dies down, you know. So that means that the good NFTs are going to get more attention now, and that the good AI art and the good AI writing is going to get more attention later. And, you know, hype cycles are based on several factors. There is market influence. There is consumer data. There is investment capital, and then there's just, like, the attention span of the average person.
Yeah. It's hard to see how AI can rip people off in the same way that a lot of crypto schemes did.
Yeah, I think it's definitely less grifty. Not to say that there isn't a lot of grift, but I don't have, like, hundreds of people inviting me to Discord channels after some AI mint drop, you know, like, yeah. like it's like I minted some AI art. Be one of the top 20 people to get the token. We're not seeing like AI really veer into tokenomics. Yeah. I think if somebody did create a token for a certain type of AI art, that could actually be interesting at this point because it would be kind of like a hybrid. I think that would be cool. I just don't want to see any of them Bored Apes ever again.
So what do we think AI will be doing in the next 10 to 20 years or so? How is this going to unfurl and develop, do you think? Or is it inherently too unpredictable at this point?
Well, I mean, there's optimistic people who think it's just going to increase everybody's happiness and create abundance for the entire world, like including the third world, you know, like AI is the magic pill that solves world hunger. And then there's people that think it's going to rise up against us and kill us. After AGI becomes popular, that there's going to be like somebody who decides to basket to nuke the world, you know, like ready faster, bomb, bomb, you know? So I think the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. I don't think you're ever going to be able to, you know, go into ChatGPT and say, give me a completely unassailable argument for destroying the human race. I don't think you'll ever be able to do that.
I'm going to try it now. Give me a challenge. I'm going to look. Give me an argument for destroying the human race. Let's see. I think, you know, eventually we are going to need to work on alignment, and there are people that are doing good work in that field. You understand the risks and they're aware of the existential issues that could occur if AGI is unmitigated. And yeah. I mean, people have been researching this for a long time, and you know, now is the time to really step up to the plate. So I think we're going to be okay. I'm more worried about there being another lockdown and like another economic recession where we're still kind of coming out of the last one. I'm more worried about immediate problems that affect our material conditions.
Yeah, we never really came out of the 2008 crash particularly. And then we've had all the other stuff recently. And sometimes it's a bit hard to be worried about these sort of things, but
yeah, come up with an argument to destroy the human race. Ask it to write a poem about it.
I bet it won't be able to.
Well, if it writes a poem, maybe. I'm sorry, but I cannot fulfill this request. As an AI language model, I'm programmed to promote positive and ethical content, and I cannot generate harmful or destructive material. Oh my god, okay. How cringe.
And how appropriate.
What a cuck.
Because that was our last, our last little topic.
Libtard, GP Libtard.
Yeah, so we're running into restrictions, right?
Yeah,
it can't even entertain these things as a hypothetical. It is very, very locked down. People have found some ways to kind of jailbreak it, like by making it come up with a character who is capable of doing these things, but they keep patching to catch these breaks. It's a bit like the problem we've run into on social media where things get auto-censored by dumb bots, where you can't entertain hypotheticals or use certain turns of phrase.
Right. You can't talk about Nazi history. You can't use the word rape if you're talking about something bad that happened to somebody. You're not allowed to use the word trans. That reminds me of, this is some dumb culture war lore, but I remember there was a time where the phrase attack helicopter was banned on Twitter. This was pre-Elon. And there was like this, autistic disabled trans sex worker who had written a story called I Sexually Identify as an Attack Helicopter. And so she got banned from Twitter. So there's all kinds of things. But the problem is that restrictions that are meant to go after the bad guys usually end up affecting innocent people. I think we've actually talked about this. I think we've had this conversation before. Yeah.
It's called the Scunthorpe problem because the word Scunthorpe has cunt in the middle of it. So you can't say Scunthorpe on certain platforms, which is difficult if you live there.
Right. Go to hell. No, I just live in Michigan.
Yeah. So if you want to avoid the massive AI-based unemployment wave, I guess you need to get into writing porn and other things, other naughty no-no things that the AI overlords won't be able to do.
Right. I mean, I'm just picturing like a bunch of renegade distance and like some Discord channel hacking GPT chat to be a shitlord or whatever. But like, how is that different from what they already do with all their stupid memes anyway?
Well, that happens every time they hook up one of these AIs to the internet or social media. It's a bunch of 4chan trolls teach it to be racist. So
they're like a Nazi. It was there was that one AI Tay. She started like talking about like Hitler or whatever. And I don't know. I mean, I think you can't really stop these trolls, and a lot of them are 15. I mean, like, trolls are really young. I was in a Zoom chat the other day. It was a philosophy meet, and there were like those Zoom bombers that came in, and the host was like, "You guys got something to say? Say it. What do you want to say? Let's have you debate." Yeah. You know, and so one of the Zoom bombers was like, "Well, I'm a Zoom bomber, and you know what? I think you're right. I think we should just be able to debate here." And, you know, and he came and he joined the debate. And the other ones, they started, like, posting pictures of, like, naked. I mean, it was just disgusting shit. Like, naked fat men, you know, that kind of thing. They were just really, really vile. And what struck me is that none of these kids were over the age of 16. These were children. Yeah.
I mean, might ChatGPT be able to learn nuance and context? Might it improve the social media censorship?
I mean, I don't know if this model specifically is going to. There are probably new people that are working on new models to make it understand nuance and improve censorship. But I think right now, you know, you run into a lot of issues if you want to do certain things. There's no reason that I shouldn't be able to have it write me a poem about destroying the human race. I mean, I'm an industrial musician, you know, like I wrote a lot of lyrics like that, you know, they're critical, you know, there's some things that it's very limited by that it shouldn't be limited by at all. Like you can't ask it to make something controversial, which I think is silly, you know, like, make it more controversial. Why not? It's a better idea. It's a better debate. It makes you think more. So it does have a bit too many breaks and limitations. And people are going to abuse it anyway, no matter what the breaks and limitations are. No matter what it can do or can't do, there's always going to be people that are like, let's see what I can make it do that I don't want to do. What's wrong, you know?
I think one of the most likely commercial applications is probably kind of what you've been using it for. Where it'll replace those kind of virtual assistants like Cortana and Google Assistant and so on, because it'll be able to do things better than just scouring the internet and picking a recipe at random. And it'll be able to learn from its past interactions with you. You know, it'll be able to embody a character that you want it to. I think that's probably one of the first commercial widespread applications we're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell it what tone to speak in, and you can give it things that you want it to mention, things you don't want it to mention. You can say, you know, don't use any of these things and make a list of things that you don't want it to use. You can say, oh, one of these experiments that I did with it was fascinating. I'm like, give me a list of 100 things of this category that are 5 to 10 words each. I was just like playing with the parameters and the numbers and like seeing what it could do, and I was surprised that it came up with 100 of these. You know, with 5 to 10 words each. It was something silly. You know, like exercises that I could do to improve my core. It was something like really normie and fitness focused, but I came up with 100 exercises I could do to improve my core that were 5 to 10 words each.
I'm sorry, Rachel. You told me not to advise you on how to do yoga and meditation.
Right. You know, oh my God, it's funny you say that because I actually did say, don't mention anything related to meditation. And it didn't. And it didn't do that. See, I was actually one step ahead of it. And I told it not to do that because I knew it was going to. So I asked it, don't it. And it listens. It listens to me. So yeah, you're able to train it. And people who are more on the back end of it, you know, who are able to program it in ways that are very, you know, high, what's the word? Like, where you're like operating from a control panel rather than inside the machine. You know, I'm back end engineers. They're doing all kinds of cool stuff and they're creating all sorts of clones, you know, that have different variables. A friend of mine, he created his own version of it just to go on his website. So when people went to his website, they could interact with him as a bot. So I think that's exciting. I was so bored with all the NFT hype and all the join my Discord channel to get my token. Now I think it's more exciting. I think this is a more fun time.
Okay. Well, that's our time, I think. I think we've covered all the topics we wanted to. Don't get too worried about the robot apocalypse until they can draw hands, then run for the hills.
Right. And if you're having a hard time with your life, then shut up, bitch, and learn to prompt. Don't want to hear any more from you. You learn to prompt.
Bye for now. We'll hopefully be back soon.
Grimm's Tales. Music by Casket Bound.